Good evening. Welcome to Live from Prairie Lights. Tonight, Stephen and Rivka Schneider will read from and discuss their book, Borderlines. Borderlines pairs portraits of people who live and work along the U.S.-Mexico border with bilingual poems that have been inspired by each of the drawings. Borderlines raises awareness about social and cultural issues associated with border life, such as education, literacy, and poverty, and fosters cross-cultural understanding. Sandra Cisneros says, "These border portraits draw me in, even now. Ordinary folks rendered with love, compassion, and intimacy at a time in history when love, compassion, and intimacy are in short supply on borders, especially when it comes to the Tex-Mex border." Stephen P. Schneider is a poet, a writer, and a professor in the Department of English at the University of Texas Pan American. His poetry has been published in national and international journals, including American Life and Poetry, Critical Quarterly, Literary Review, Prairie Schooner, and Tikkun. Rivka Schneider is one of the foremost artists of La Frontera, the binational region of the Rio Grande Valley in South Texas. Her artwork reflects the social and economic realities of the border while celebrating the local culture, people, and music. They live in McAllen, Texas. Please welcome Rivka and Stephen Schneider.
Thank you, Lindsay, and thank you, everyone, for being here tonight. Bienvenidos. Buenas noches. Rivka and I are delighted to be in Iowa City to share with you our work this evening. I want to thank Jan Weissmiller of Prairie Lights for hosting this event and her staff who have helped to put it together. It's very heartwarming for us to return to Iowa City. This was where I earned my advanced degrees. I have both an MFA and my PhD in American Literature from the University of Iowa, and am proud of it. Also very pleased at the reception that we have gotten here in Iowa. In the last couple of weeks, three major articles have come out about our work, one in the Iowa Source, and then two today here in Iowa City, a piece in the Daily Iowan, and a piece in today's Iowa City Press Citizen. So even though we are a long way from La Frontera, the border, it's very nice to know of the interest in the border and our work here in Iowa City. What we're going to do tonight is I'm going to read a number of the poems from the book, Borderlines, Drawing Border Lives, and then Rivka will come up and talk about the creative process. And then afterwards, we will be happy to entertain questions from you. I'm glad that most of you have a copy of the book in your hand so that you can refer to the artwork in the book as I'm reading the poems. Each of the poems in the book has been written in response to the art. And people often ask what came first, the poems or the drawings? And the answer to that question is the drawings came first. So she's the leader in this dance. It's very much a marriage and collaboration of art and poetry and figure of speech. We began this project in 2001 when we moved to Texas. And over the course of the next several years, Rivka drew many of these pictures. And from about 2003 to 2007, I wrote most of the poems in the collection. And our first stage of development was actually a traveling exhibit, which we have, also called Borderlines, Drawing Border Lives, which consists of these 25 portraits and the 25 poems in English and Spanish that are silkscreened onto text panels. And that exhibit has traveled in Texas to several places, and we hope to travel it nationally. The next stage of development was our meeting our publisher, Bryce Milligan, at the Texas Book Festival, who, when we told him about the project, got very excited and decided to publish the book. So here we are tonight. I would like to begin with a poem entitled El Ángel, which is found on page 10 of the book. Actually, the full title of the poem is Bienvenido el Ángel. You'll see in these poems that there's some code switching, some movement back and forth between English and Spanish. And that's because the region that we live in South Texas, which is called the Rio Grande Valley, is a bilingual, bicultural area that borders northern Mexico in the state of Tamaulipas. This first poem is about a woman who is sitting at an open-air flea market on a Sunday morning. The open-air markets are very popular in South Texas, and you see them throughout the Rio Grande Valley. She's just come from her church, and she's having her lunch there, a bowl of menudo. So this poem, again, is Bienvenido el Ángel. The name of the restaurant is Taqueria El Ángel. El Ángel is eating a chili pepper at the Taqueria, which bears his name, on a Sunday afternoon in late October at Ochoa's Flea Market. El Ángel likes tacos too, and the young girls who wait on tables and serve chicharrones, nopalitos, and tamales to the customers. The young girls who wear Dia de los Muertos pumpkin orange t-shirts with skeletons that smile and say, dead to the bone. One of them brings out a steaming bowl of menudo to a white-haired, toothless old woman named Rosa, who has lived all her life in Mission, Texas, and comes to the mercado with her nieces and their children on Sundays after attending her church named the Messiah. She finds comfort here among the workers eating their gorditas and the conjunto music playing in the background, and El Ángel on the billboard blessing the food on the table. One of the interesting creative challenges in writing this book was to discover the poetic forms that would not only best express my response to the artwork, but also allow for some diversity of expression within the text of the book. I didn't want all the poems to be in the same point of view or in the same form. That is, I didn't want them to all be free verse, because over time I felt in a book of this nature that would sound very monotonous. So this next poem, which is entitled Young Street Musician, and you can see the drawing on page 41 of the book, is actually a villanelle. And you see this young girl in the border town of Nuevo Progreso. We live in McAllen, Texas, which is about 25 minutes from Nuevo Progreso, which is a very small border town. The largest border city across from where we live is Reynosa, Mexico. But in the winter months, a lot of Iowans and Nebraskans and Minnesotans can be found in Nuevo Progreso. Sometimes they're shopping, other times they're at a place called Arriba Margarita, having a drink. And on the streets of Nuevo Progreso, you will see young children selling wares, handbags, and in this instance, playing the accordion for spare change. So this is called Young Street Musician, and it's a villanelle. She plays the accordion for spare change in the streets of this bustling border town. The life she lives is sad, lonely, and strange. She sings ballads with love as their refrain. The wells of her eyes run deep, dark, and brown. She plays the accordion for spare change. The sphere of her life has limited range, though she would like to smile and dance around. The life she lives is sad, lonely, and strange. Each morning she returns to the same lane, playing for her food, working hard not to frown. She plays the accordion for spare change. She used to sell handbags and golden chains. Now she plays these songs with their bittersweet sound. The life she lives is sad, lonely, and strange. On Thursdays, she sings in the rain. Yellow petals fall softly on the ground. She plays the accordion for spare change. The life she lives is sad, lonely, and strange. One of the goals of our book is to promote cross-cultural understanding, to get a better sense of the life and culture along the U.S.-Mexico border, the Rio Grande, which two peoples share. And there is a lot of movement back and forth across the border. There is less so today because of the border wall. And one of the issues that we take up in one of the later poems in the book is the border wall. When we began this project in 2001, there was no border wall, and one could cross the river and cross the bridge over the river freely without worrying about troops or tanks. Unfortunately, today that's not the case. Part of the problem, of course, is that in northern Mexico today, you do have drug gangs that have taken over much of the border. But there's still a good deal of movement. And the next poem I want to read to you is found on page 19, which is about a vaquero. Vaquero, you know, is roughly translated as cowboy. And this gentleman traveled from Veracruz, Mexico, to the Rio Grande Valley because he was looking for work, as so many people from Mexico come to the United States for. And it's about the new life that he is trying to lasso for himself. And in this case, the title in English and Spanish is the same, Vaquero de Veracruz. All of the translations in this book were done by José Antonio Rodríguez, who is a bilingual poet himself. It is a long way, vaquero, from the cattle you worked on the ranch outside Veracruz. I see you here in your soft white Stetson hat, shiny leather Western boots, your blue jeans and construction worker shirt, a long way from the chaparral and the saddle horses, a long way from the campfires under the starry Mexican sky. You have come to the valley, El Valle, to lasso a new life on this side of the Rio Grande and work construction for money to send your family back home. You come to the Mercado on Sundays to listen to rancheras played on CDs and dream of riding in the saddle across the land, slowly sold and corralled. Many people really love this drawing and like the way that Rivka has used the Conte there to just sketch in his hat. And this very much is a book of art as well as poetry. And Rivka will be talking about the creative process after I complete my reading, but I'm just so excited by the drawings that she's done. She's done over 100 of them in this series, which we refer to as Faces of the Border. And in putting the book together, I selected 25 of them that were most compelling to me. But I'll tell you a little secret. As I was doing the book and I wrote the poems gradually, I would finish two or three poems and then I would find in my study two or three more portraits that I hadn't written about. And so Rifke, I think, was on to the idea that maybe I would continue and write more poems about the drawings if she left them around in my study. And she was right. So that was very, very clever and smart of her. Well, the book captures a range of tones and emotions because, like Life Anywhere, there's both sadness and happiness. The next poem I'm going to read, Beggar and Daughter, is one of the sadder poems in the book. We're moving back and forth here between the Texas side of the border and the Mexican side of the border. How many of you have been to South Texas? I thought we might have some winter Texans here. Are any of you winter Texans? Winter Texans are actually Midwesterners who spend the winter months in Texas. And about Thanksgiving time, you see the Winnebagos and the other RVs traveling down into the Rio Grande Valley with license plates from Nebraska. And you can go to Hawkeye breakfast there. And, you know, there's quite a local culture there for Midwesterners in December and January. Well, this poem is entitled Beggar and Daughter. And there's a little dicho at the beginning of the poem. A dicho is a proverb or saying. And the dicho is in Spanish. And it reads, Cuando hay hambre, no hay mal pan. Which means, when it's on page 8, when there is hunger, there is no bad bread. And it's a reference to the fact that the young girl in this portrait is chewing on a card. Plastic card, as if she's hungry, as if that's the only nourishment she can get. Our book addresses educational and other kinds of socioeconomic disparities along the border, and this is one of the poems that speaks to the hunger and poverty along the border. It's called Beggar and Daughter. This young girl chews on a plastic card. The streets of Nuevo Progreso fall 10 years after NAFTA, hungry, brown eyes wide open. She leans her head back against her mother, jacket zipped against the wind. A few strands of hair hang down over her forehead. Maquilas along the border have closed down. The number of trucks crossing the bridge with automobile parts, washing machines, denim shirts and pants has slowed to a trickle. She owns only this card in her mouth. Her mother cannot afford to buy her a bracelet or a brightly colored frog or crab from Oaxaca. She wears a striped serape across the shoulders. Her lips are sealed, mouth lined by disappointment, eyes glazed with fear, trapped in an economy of harsh winds and muddy streets. She looks at you in sadness, her dreams void of magic animals or hope. Once NAFTA was created, there were a number of American companies that moved in along the northern border of Mexico and established factories, and those factories are called maquiladores, and the short term for that are maquilas, which is the reference in this poem. As I mentioned previously, there is an open-air economy and an open-air market. The name for those are called pulgas, la pulga. And on page 15, you see a drawing of a boot seller at a pulga. A man who's very happy to be on this side of the border. And the title of this poem is called Boot Seller. In Spanish, El Vendedor de Botas. You sit back in your leather chair with that white sombrero on your head and smile out at the world that passes by your stall at the Mission Flea Market, where you sell Western boots to construction workers from Oaxaca, to migrant workers from Camargo, to fruit sellers from Nuevo Guerrero. Your smile is as wide as the Gulf of Mexico, and you listen all day to rancheras and conjunto music on the radio. You are happy to be sitting here. You are happy to be selling these leather boots, polished and shiny in the heat of the day. You cradle in your hands a cell phone, as if you hold the world in your fingertips. You talk to those who enter your outdoor tienda and listen to their stories of coyotes, the women and children they have left behind. You listen to their struggles to find work. You are a man comfortable selling boots at the Mission Flea Market, close to the fruit stands and the jewelry sellers and the used clothes on the racks. You are proud of the boots on your shelves and the vast expanse of desert you have crossed. You have a glint in your eyes of a man who has made it on this side of the Rio Grande, content to sell these boots on a sunny afternoon in a flea market in Mission, Texas. When I spoke yesterday on the phone with a writer from the Iowa City Press Citizen, who was doing an article on our book and our work, he asked me about the relevancy of our project to Iowa. And what I told him was that the border was moving north. And what I meant by that is, as you know, there has been an influx of Mexicans to Midwestern states like Iowa and Nebraska, Michigan, and elsewhere. It's not really a new phenomenon. It's just a more visible, manifest phenomenon, because migrant workers had been coming up here for decades. But today you have more of a density of population because of meatpacking plants hiring a lot of Mexican workers. So if we are to understand our neighbors and build not walls but bridges between peoples, then we think our book will help to accomplish that because of the understanding that it provides and the expression of life along the border. I'm just going to read a few more and then turn this over to Rivka. On page 28, you have a drawing of a mariachi player. Mariachi music, of course, is the folk music of Mexico. And one of the phenomena in the Southwest today is that many schools, both high schools and colleges, have student mariachi performing groups. At my university, the University of Texas Pan American, we have three student mariachi performing groups. One of them is an all-female mariachi. Recently, Rivka and I had the pleasure of hearing our Mariachi Atzlan play in Albuquerque, New Mexico. There was what was called a mariachi spectacular on the main plaza in Albuquerque. And mariachi groups from all over the Southwest performed in a competition, and from Mexico as well. And it turns out our student mariachi, the UTPA mariachi, won the spectacular. They got to perform at the Sandia Resort and Casino the next night, along with one of the outstanding professional mariachi groups from Mexico. So this poem is about one of our female mariachi players, and it's called Triolet, which is a French form. She tucks the violin beneath her chin. Her eyes are dark. She will not frown or grin. This mariachi femenil will win. She tucks the violin beneath her chin, plays her ballad of betrayal and chagrin. A woman in black, a man who will sin. She tucks the violin beneath her chin. Her eyes are dark. She will not frown or grin. On page 12, we'll look at a different kind of musician. This is a young boy back in the border town of Nuevo Progreso. He's playing the accordion on the streets. He's only 3 years old. It's hard to believe that they're that young out on the streets playing the accordion. But he is only that old. And he has a small cup on the curb beside him. And there's such sadness in his eyes that Rivka has captured in this drawing. So this is called 3-Year-Old Street Musician. You hug the accordion as if it were your baby brother and look out at the world with the sad eyes of a panda bear taken from its natural habitat. You play a song for all the children to hear who stand in the rain with a candle in one hand and a cup in the other hand. You play for all the lost children who have disappeared in wars, in the crevices of earth, in floods of the seas. You play a song for all the children who go hungry, for all the children who sleep at night on dirt floors, for all the children who never saw another butterfly. We believe that art and poetry can be put to the service of the issues that are confronting our world. Homelessness, poverty, illiteracy. And what we've tried to do here through our art and poetry is to make a statement and to call attention to those issues along the U.S.-Mexico border. We're really proud of this book. It's a hardbound book. It was printed in Hong Kong on very fine paper. Makes a beautiful gift or coffee table book. And our publisher did a remarkable job in keeping the price very reasonable. It's only $19.95. So we hope you'll support our book here tonight. That's my sales pitch. After the presentation, we'll be happy to sign it individually for you. I'm going to read just 3 more poems. Actually, I think I'm just going to read 2 more and then turn this over to my wife. The introduction to the book is written by Norma Cantu. Norma Cantu is a professor of border studies and Chicano studies at the University of Texas, San Antonio. And she wrote a very, I think, powerful introduction. When I read it, I was just so happy. And I was happy because although we are not natives of the region, we have lived there for almost 10 years. And it was so important to have the endorsement of an important Latina critic and writer like Norma Cantu of our work. And she makes the point that though the Schneiders are non-natives, they have done what she considers a very nice job of capturing the realism of the life along the border. And in her introduction, she calls attention to 2 of the poems that she finds are more political, more overtly political than the rest. In some of the other poems, like Beggar and Daughter, there is a political statement being made, but it's more implicit. Whereas in these 2 poems, the statement that's being made is more explicit, in part through the repetitions that are used in the poems. I'm going to ask you to help me out tonight with 1 of them. It's found on page 48 of the book. The poem is called Es una mentira, which in Spanish means it's a lie. And you see the drawing here of a woman with a very stern and serious look on her face. And when we met her, she told us a story about a sign in one of the shop windows. Yeah, we asked her about the sign, which said, "Don't give money to the children." It said, "Don't give money to the children." This was in one of the store windows in Nuevo Progreso. So we asked her, well, you know, why is that sign in the window? What does it mean? And she went on to tell us that es una mentira. It's a lie. That, in fact, the children on the streets do need money, and they're on the streets because their parents cannot afford to send them to school. I think the rest of the sign said, don't give money to the children because they should be in school. And she was very strong with us that, in fact, that was not the case. So this was the last poem that I wrote in this series of 25. And it took the longest, I think, to put together. And what pulled it together for me was that one line, es una mentira, which kept on reoccurring in my head. And it's the refrain in this poem. So what I've asked groups to do when I read this poem is to help me with the refrain line by reciting it together as a group. So let's practice it first. Es una mentira. Beautiful. Okay, so here we go. Are you ready? Okay. The shopkeeper's sign says, don't give money to the children. Es una mentira. Our schools have enough teachers. Es una mentira. Our teachers have enough classrooms. Es una mentira. Okay, we need everybody here, nice and loud. Our classrooms have enough desks. Es una mentira. Good, we're getting into it. Our desks have enough chairs. Es una mentira. You know, and this is true also in the U.S. We have public school issues with space and classrooms. The chairs are waiting for the children. Es una mentira. The children should not be begging in the streets. Es una mentira. Here's a good one. Everybody ready? The streets are full of whores. Es una mentira. The whores wear dresses with pink flowers. Es una mentira. The flowers that I sell feed my family. Es una mentira. Okay, keep it up. My family is not proud. Es una mentira. The proud river separates our two people. Es una mentira. The people would like a fence. Es una mentira. The fence will keep us out. Es una mentira. Outside, the sky is always blue. Es una mentira. Inside, the blue books are full of writing. Es una mentira. The writing is on the wall. Es una mentira. The wall is for all the children. Es una mentira. The school is always open. Es una mentira. The open book is always closed. Es una mentira. The closed book is always open. Es una mentira. Very nice. Beautiful. Okay. And I'm going to conclude with the poem Disappeared, which is the last poem in the book. The drawing is found on page 51. And this poem is about the drawing entitled Mass for the Disappeared. This is a drawing of a woman at a mass for the disappeared in Guatemala. You know, in the 80s and into the 90s, there were a number of right-wing military juntas empowered in Central and Latin America. And people were disappearing from the streets in places like Nicaragua and Chile and El Salvador, often for holding just the wrong ideas or the wrong beliefs. And they were never heard from again. And there was a movement of women called Las Madres de los Desaparecidos who began to protest against these disappearances. And they would hold vigils, and they would march, and they would light candles. And that was about the most affirmative thing they could do to call attention to their uncles and fathers and brothers who had disappeared. And so I had that thought in my mind when I began this poem, because it was inspired by this picture of a woman at a mass for the disappeared. But I also began to think about other disappearances around the world for various reasons. And I wrote the first version of the poem without the last four lines of the poem. There was no reference at any point yet to the border. Then I began to think, well, you know, this poem and drawing really belongs in the book. And how could I do it in such a way that it would fit into the book? And what I did is made a reference at the end of the poem to the disappearance of women from Ciudad Juarez. So the conclusion of the poem makes reference to those disappearances that are going on today. Women being killed and murdered and kidnapped in Juarez and also in other places in Mexico, but also throughout the world. So this poem is simply called Disappeared. Disappeared into thin air. Disappeared into black night. Disappeared in broad daylight. Disappeared. Disappeared for speaking out. Disappeared for remaining silent. Disappeared for asking questions. Disappeared. Disappeared for wearing a Star of David. Disappeared for wearing a cross. Disappeared for belonging to a union. Disappeared. Disappeared in Chile. Disappeared in Guatemala. Disappeared in El Salvador. Disappeared. Disappeared from family picnics. Disappeared from wives wrapped in shawls. Disappeared from mothers and grandmothers. Disappeared. Disappeared from marketplaces. Disappeared from cafes. Disappeared from nightclubs. Disappeared. Disappeared from the avenues of palm trees. Disappeared from the fields of sugarcane. Disappeared from the rooms of the living. Disappeared. Disappeared from the town square with its fountains. Disappeared from vigils. Disappeared from the candlelit night. Disappeared. Disappeared from Ciudad Juarez. Disappeared from Maquiladores. Disappeared from the face of the earth. Disappeared. Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. I now want to ask Rivka to come up and share with you some of her thoughts.
Good evening. I wanted to talk about the creative process and share some of the things I've learned about the creative process in general that may help you be more creative in your life. And the first thing I wanted to share is that you need to learn to trust the creative process. One of the most helpful things one of my early painting teachers taught me is that every painting goes through an ugly stage. And you need to know that, because otherwise you'll give up at the ugly stage. But once you know that, the creative process goes in steps. Then you'll just keep on going. I like to make an analogy from sports for this, that when you step up to the plate to hit a baseball, you slam that ball, but then you step back and you see what happened. Should you run? What should you do? And it's the same thing in any artistic process. Is you throw yourself into it, you do it, but then you need to step back and see, does something need to be added, changed, revised, and so on. But you don't do both at the same time. When you are writing or when you are painting or whatever it is you're creating, you let that flow and then you step back, and that's the other part of the process. And so writers will tell you the art is in the revision. You don't need to worry while you're pouring it out, pour out your heart, but then that's where you bring the art in. The second point I like to make is that you need to give yourself time, and a lot of time, in order to develop your art. Malcolm Gladwell, in his book Outliers, which is a wonderful explication of who and why certain people become the very top in their fields, explains that the first thing you need is about 10,000 hours in your field, you know, in your focus, in your work, to become the very best. Now, not everybody has to become the very best in what they're doing. You can do it for the pleasure. Creativity is what life is about. When I used to speak to my younger son, Roni, about being in the zone, he would always say, it's good enough to be in the area. And, you know, and that's important too, but it's important to realize what is required of you to, and what is required in terms of time, in order to develop your creativity, your area to the most that you can. And the third point I like to make is that you need to learn to accept yourself. It's important to explore all different areas. If you're into visual arts, film, whatever your area is, explore all the different aspects, find what it is that you want to do, but then at some point you need to focus on that area. And it's a lot of people find what they're doing, they find their metier, and then they kind of like, oh, that's not good enough. I want to be like this person, that person, and instead of accepting themselves. And so that's another very important point. And one book that's very helpful on the creative path is The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. And I recommend that to anyone. So I see a lot of people shaking heads. They know about that. So I wanted to end with a little poem that I've written about my points. And it goes like this. Trust your creativity. It is your soul's flow. The expression of infinity. So now I'd like to take any questions about our book or whatever comes up, please. Yeah, when I first came to the Valley, I had always worked from life. So I organized each week a group of artists and a local model. The only drawing in this book is from that time is Rolando, so you could see that. Unfortunately, I was seriously injured in a car accident, and I wasn't able to work for over a year. And when I began working again, I found it easier to work from photographs because I could start and stop. And also, even though I like that drawing of Rolando, you can get a lot more different expressions, different parts of life when you're working for photographs. So I did make that transition. And that's it. Another question? Please. I noticed that with your visual images, you use many different techniques, and you use color differently, you use outline differently. And I don't know if you can articulate this, but how did you find your way in which for each of these pieces you found such radically different uses of line and color and image? Well, when you're creating a work of art, you start with what it is you want to express. So I would feel what I want to express, and then what kind of color, what kind of use of line, what kind of use of tone. And then a lot of times there's the demands of the design. For example, Stephen was talking about the vaquero, that I just used an outline for his hat. Now, in many other places, there's just outline, but you don't notice as much because it's in the charcoal. But the point there is if I had made his whole hat white, then all your attention, you know, this is just a design and composition concept, but all your attention would go to that hat, and that's what you would see. So that's how it evolves. It's always from what you're trying to express about your subject. And sometimes a lot of it is from what's inside you that you're expressing through this subject. Any other questions? Oh, well, people in our area totally fought the wall in every way they could, because the economics of the whole area, it was all integrated, and so it was nothing but a problem for the area, and you know they would start putting the walls right through a college campus, so you had to fight that, you know, or through somebody's backyard. Or cutting off businesses that have, you know, been there, forever. People wouldn't be able to get to that business. So there's just so many aspects of it. It's a problem wildlife, and so there's just so many different problems, and it doesn't solve anything. So it just creates more problems, more pressure. It just puts more money in the hands of the drug cartels, because now you have to have real experts to be the coyotes, the people who bring people across. And it's just part of the escalation of the tension and the problem. So it's not a problem solver in any way. NAFTA, you know, it matters. Businessmen would love it. There's all the maquiladoras and so on. But then it cost more people to be coming to the border, to be coming to this country, because the price of corn went down so much that so many more people were forced off their land. So it's complicated. Everything's very complicated. So it matters how it affects you personally. Any other questions? Please. Well, that's what we're working on. It was some of the people we got to know well, and you know, like for example, Proud Vendedor. You know, we got to know him very well, and we're telling their story. And so these were always from different encounters with people. But like there was a review in the San Antonio paper, and we're hoping this book will be used in bilingual classrooms on both sides of the border. And so, as I was doing this whole series, many different people from Mexico would see my art, because I'm in a gallery in McAllen that's right on the border. And they would have the same response. It's like they would say, well, we see these people all the time, but we never really saw them. And so it has an effect on people from Mexico, too. Because these are the people in Mexico who are the throwaway people of Mexico. Any other questions? Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Oh, okay. Well, anybody who would like to get the book, we could sign it for you. And any other questions, you will be here. Thank you. Buenas noches.